France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, September 28th, 2015. A couple more days left of the quarter, and good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Numbers have been all over the page today. A lot of pressure on gold today. Gold was down $14 and the New York spot currently 1133. Silver down 54 cents, up 3.5% at 1469. That just got hammered today along with the other white metals. Platinum was down 27 at 923 and palladium was down 15 at 652. You have the DX, the U.S. DX today is down just slightly, 0.19 at 96.07. Crude oil down 123 at 44.47. Paper markets got hammered also today. Down, you know, last time about 300 points. Getting ready to break that 16,000 mark. Down 312 points at 16,001. And the NASDAQ was down. Whew, big day in the NASDAQ, down 3%, 142 points, 45.43. The S&P down 49 at 1881. That was down a little over 2.5%. The Dow was down just almost 2%. I believe the European markets also were hit heavy. Both Germany and London were down over 2%. Japan was down 1.3%. So big moves in the European and Asian markets. The 10-year yield, that's also falling 2.09%, down 0.0. Euro was the bright spot of the day, up 0.33 at 1.12. So you have the Dow tumbling 300 points. Biotech got crushed. I don't know if the elections in Spain carried through Europe and brought it upon ours to have a little bit of a impact on the markets. But other than that, hey, there's problems out there. I think last week, as I mentioned, I don't mean this in a nasty way, but there was probably a little bit of a Pope rally that we saw to some degree. And no one was focused on the markets, Al, and no one paid any attention. They were easily manipulated, and this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. The markets are going to fold. Pardon?
That the markets are down again today.
Yeah, I mean, the markets are going to fold. I mean, we've talked about this before, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but all of these predictions were all predictions that can't be controlled when all people have to look to is our financial situation out of Wall Street and Washington. I mean, the debt that we have, we talk about this all the time. That's why I don't want to spend a lot of time on it today. That is our problem. That is the problem. That is the truth. And
the problem is not simply to say that we have a debt. The problem is that the debt can't be paid. And that is the insoluble problem that faces us, again, because the debt corresponds to paper debt instruments. If we're in debt for $18 trillion in the national debt, there's $18 trillion worth of bonds out there. And if we cancel the debt, we cancel those bonds. People are holding those bonds as assets. They're in your pension funds. They're in some of your bank savings deposit or your bank safety deposit boxes. People have bonds. Wipe out the debt, wipe out the correlative asset. System can't take that strain. We can't pay the debt and we can't repudiate the debt. What are we going to do? And no one has an answer for that.
Because there isn't an answer. This is a day of reckoning that's coming.
Yeah.
And yes, I get upset with the way people are manipulating. You know, we talk about the price of gold and silver being manipulated. Well, there's a lot of people being manipulated out there when they're being told about these events and situations. I have no control over those events and situations. The only thing I can control is getting prepared what I can see as the truth, where I have backup for truth, where it shows me the day of reckoning is coming and it's shortly around the corner. That's the big problem. That's what the House of Cards was built on. That's what's going to make the House of Cards fall. And anyway, what's next, Al?
Well, I don't know. I've got an article here. I know I put it in here, but where did I put it? Well, let's do this. China's coming date, Great Depression. This is from the Federalist. China is on the road to its own Great Depression. The causes of our Great Depression are still of our own. I mean, the United States Great Depression in the 1930s are still hotly debated, but the best explanation comes from Friedrich Hayek, aided by the work of Milton Friedman, who conclude that the Depression, the U.S. Depression, Great Depression, was brought and prolonged by loose monetary policy in the 1920s. We had the Roaring Twenties, loose monetary policy, followed by a too-tight money policy after the initial bust. They overreacted. They say, oops, we've been too free with the money. Now we have to tighten up on the money. They got too tight with the money, and the misguided supply-side policies of Hoover and Roosevelt served to postpone the recovery further. China's depression will stem from similar causes. China's massive over-indebtedness, which underlies its current slowdown, is the inevitable outcome of easy money policy in the recent past. Now, this is interesting because a lot of people assume that because China has $1.2 trillion in U.S. bonds and the biggest positive trade balance in the world, so far as I know, they are presumed to be sitting on a bunch of assets. And not many people realize that China has also a massive debt problem, right? So they're very similar to the United States in that regard. They are not just they hold a bunch of our bonds, but they also got a bunch of their own debt. And apparently this debt is beginning to weigh on them. The article continues, China's monetary policy is increasingly far too tight, even as China's central bank attempts to accomplish the opposite. Misguided supply-side policies will compound these problems in a lurch away from economic liberalization toward increased state control of industry. Put all these factors together and China heads into a depression. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, Absolutely, they're heading into that area. Why do you think the president of China was over here wooing the biggest corporations, the heads of the biggest corporations, prior to even talking to Obama, promising them all kinds of deregulation going into China? Because they see what's coming. You know, they see what's coming, and they're out there
to some
trying
extent,
to buy.
But I don't know if anybody really sees what's coming. I mean, they understand we are in strange territory. That is, nobody's ever been in before. But I wonder how many people really understand what's coming, and that includes me. I'm not saying I understand what's coming, but I can't see that whatever it is, it's going to be good. You know, we are off in uncharted territory, and are we going to find sea serpents, or are we going to find a new continent? What are we doing? This is like Columbus. You know, embarking, and are we going to find India? Are we going to find Florida? What are we going to come up? What are we going to do here?
And this is exactly why he was wooing these heads of these multinational corporations, telling them that he has their back.
Is that his name?
Excuse me?
You said he's wooing. Is his name Wooing?
Could be, Al.
Uh-huh.
But the point is. You know, they do have problems. The point is, China is heading into, it's not going to become any better for China.
No, I understand that. China, we've heard all this, and we've talked about this in the program before. China has been overrated. China has been hyped as if it's this, some sort of a massive industrial power. Well, there's truth to that, but it's like a massive industrial power that's in the middle of a forest that's on fire. Yeah, you got a nice factory there, but your forest is on fire. And it's not clear how well your factory is going to weather that fire. And the fire is likely to drag on for a number of years, and because they've got this massive population problem, massive pollution problem. You know, there are so many things working against China that you can't just sit back and treat it as something that's invulnerable. It looks like now maybe, you know, China's had a difficult problem in its stock markets for the last year or so. But people have generally regarded that as sort of an aberration, not an indication of what's really going on in China. But I don't think it is just an aberration. I think the stock market, and I don't, that's not an original opinion, and I'm not the first one to say it, but I think the stock market is not just something that got a little out of control and dropped too much by accident, but it'll be okay in a little while. I think it's evidence that people within China and problems within China are beginning to manifest. People recognize it, explains that there's currency outflow. People are taking their money out of China and moving it into foreign countries like the United States because they see trouble coming. And if they do, you know, how much trouble can China have before everybody's got trouble? Can the problems China have be confined to China, or are they necessarily contagious and likely to affect the rest of the world?
And, you know, with Trump out there talking about eliminating these trade agreements, so NAFTA and so forth, you know China's thinking along those lines. Well, you know, if someone like Trump gets elected and they actually change those agreements or eliminate those agreements, they could basically see some of these, you know, manufacturing jobs go back. Come here to the USA. Do I believe that's going to happen? No, I don't. But they could certainly already be sort of defending and trying to make sure that those positions and that manufacturing does not leave, no matter who comes into office next year. So, you know, this is all pre-planning, and I think it's big. I think it's big that they're there trying to buy these heads of these corporations, and to me, I see it more as jobs leaving, whether they cancel the trade agreements or not. But it's going to be interesting even to see if we get that far.
What do you mean?
Before this whole system doesn't collapse.
You mean system. The blood moon may finish us off?
Blood moon might finish us off, but the whole system might already collapse before we even have to worry about the cancellations of trade agreements and so forth. So,
I watched the blood moon last night to some for a little while. You know, I didn't just sit there and watch it for an hour and a half. It's like watching paint dry. Ooh. You know, it's kind of interesting. The moon turns kind of reddish there for a while and rest, that sort of thing. Interesting. It was the first mild night that I have understood, that I've seen take place in Texas since last spring. It wasn't precisely cool, but it was cool enough where it was a change in the weather, change in the seasons. Summer may finally be ending here in Dallas. Might be going into fall before, you know, before long, hard to say. But it was still, and it was eerie. And it was interesting to sit there and watch that moon. You know, it starts the penumbra, if that's the proper term, the shadow of the earth on the moon. It begins to cover it. It's not initially red, it's just kind of dark gray. But eventually it gets where you can see that there's a reddish cast to it, and you can see that. It's interesting. First time I've seen a blood moon. Next one's in 1930 or 2033, and maybe I'll be around to see it, maybe I won't. But you look at it and you wonder. The air was so still at Dallas last night that it was just a little bit eerie. And you sit there and you wonder, does this really signal a change in our world? You know, a lot of people said, ooh, the blood moons are going to, you know, they're marking a big change and things are really going to hit the fan now. Well, maybe they are. I don't know. But it was interesting to watch and it was interesting to wonder about. And today's market fall doesn't completely discount the blood moon's effect. We'll watch and see what happens tomorrow and maybe the day after that and so on. But what do you think, Melody? Does the blood moon, is that a significant event? Does that mark a real turning point right now? Or is it more of a myth?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the blood moon, I don't think it was supposed to equate to our stock markets and to our economy. Mm. I think there was big changes that are supposed to, you know, be more in the spiritual level, so forth, and you know, maybe Israel or something like that. So changes. However, I didn't see it. We had quite a bit of cloud cover last night. But a couple of weeks ago, walking my dog late at night, the moon was just as red as the pictures that I've seen for the blood moon. A couple of weeks ago, it was, and I actually thought that I had the date wrong because the moon was so red. And it even seemed bigger a couple of weeks ago than it did last night when I saw it come up. It didn't seem to be that super moon. It just seemed a like a regular full moon.
Maybe it was a rehearsal.
Perhaps.
Maybe so, it was a dress rehearsal for the real blood moon last night.
But I do believe these are signs that we experience. And, you know, I don't think they should be, you know, and that's what they should be. They should be signs telling
you know,
us that there's,
but
again, you look to the truth, you look to the facts and things that we can prove and things that we can confirm.
We can confirm the past. We can't confirm the future. All right, not in terms of on particular days and rest, that sort of thing. You can have faith, you can believe, but it's not the same thing. You don't confirm it until it actually happens, and that means it's, you can confirm it in the present, you can confirm it in the past, hard to confirm in the future. And that's what makes, what irritates me, and this isn't over. I don't know what's going to happen with the blood moons. I don't know if they're going to have the effect people talk about or they're done. They're not. I don't know, and I'm not saying making. But I listen to people like John Hagee, and he was billowing about the blood moons and their great spiritual significance last year. You know, probably 18 months ago. And he makes a persuasive case because he's an extraordinary orator. And he gets you going and you get, but now where are we? You know, it's one of those things where you start making some of these predictions. And especially if you do it with dates and say, oh, this is going to happen by such and such. That's generally a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows the date. Right? Nobody really knows the date. Some people get lucky once in a while, and then they claim to be a guru. But the truth is, nobody really knows the date. And
sure.
From my perspective, you look at some of these events, you look at the fundamentals, you say, this is what's likely to happen, but is this going to happen tomorrow or a year from now? We don't know.
But you know what, Al?
You can see what's coming. You can't see when it's coming.
Well, I do know the break's coming, but I also just want to say this real quick. It's not exciting for folks, I believe. You know, and the pressure and the intensity that is created on various situations. And, hey, we got a long way to go, folks. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen next month. We don't know. But that's... And I've been hearing these situations, these promises, these events for over 20 years. And I don't think anyone's been correct yet.
If they are, you'll hear about it. They'll have a book out within 90 days. Beyond the talk shows and rest, that sort of thing. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We got a great little special going on today. It's a gold special. It's going to be a Mint State $61, $20 either a Liberty or a Saint Gaudens. It's going to be a $20 gold piece, a Mint State 61 $20 gold piece. You will receive one quarter ounce American Gold Eagle. This includes all your shipping costs, and the total package is $1,695. $1,695. I mean, that's just about right at wholesale for these prices. So I do have a limited supply at these low, low prices, so don't wait to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That is a Mint State 61 $20 gold piece, 1/4 ounce American Gold Eagle. That's a modern issue coin, and includes your shipping costs for $1,695. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, sign up for the weekly newsletter, and of course you can listen to the radio program Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock, live, right from the website.
An article here from CNBC. The headline is, Putin, quote, "Do you realize what you've done?" Unquote. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday admonished those who supported democratic revolutions in the Middle East, telling the United Nations they led to the rise of a globally ambitious Islamic State. And he's got a good point here. We have meddled in the politics of the Middle East. We've sat back and said, oh my gosh, that terrible Saddam Hussein. We've got to do something about this. We're going to give the people of Iraq the blessings of democracy. How have those blessings worked out? It's turned into nothing but a tragedy, a catastrophe, a disaster for the people of Iraq. As bad as Hussein may have been, he was much better than what's happened without him. And we have done this, at least in part, to supposedly give Iraq a democracy. Very few people understand what democracy is. Very few people understand that Iraq, as a Muslim country, can never be a democracy. You are not going to give democracy to Saudi Arabia. You're not going to give democracy to Iran. It is anathema. Democracy is anathema to the Muslim faith. It's anathema to any real faith. It's an anathema to Christianity, if you understand what's going on. The fundamental idea behind democracy is that we'll all sit down, we'll take a vote on what is right and what is wrong. And if we all vote that we can have abortions, okay, then we can have abortions. And a week later, if we vote again, say, no, we can't have them, okay? We can't have abortions. And a week after that, we say, okay, murder all the kids you want. The idea behind democracy is that man's law is superior to everything else. And the idea behind the Muslim faith is that God's law is superior to everything else. Because the Muslims are serious about their faith, they're not going to take a vote on whether or not they should have prayer call once, twice, or 10 times a day. That's not what's happening within that faith. It can't be. These people are serious about their faith, and that means they cannot accept democracy. Insofar as we have tried to impose democracy on them. And democracy is fundamentally atheistic. Again, it's the idea that man's law triumphs over everything. If we were real Christians, we wouldn't want it either. We'd want to sit back and say, wait a second, what's God's law got to say about this? There's some things that man's law can figure out. God didn't tell us how high the grass can grow in your front lawn. God's law doesn't tell you how fast you can drive in a school zone. There's things we can decide among ourselves, but there are other things, if you're serious about your faith, that you don't get to decide. And it doesn't matter if all of us say, wait a second, we're in favor of this. If the God's law says, nope, that's a no-go. That's, if you're serious about your faith, that's the way it is. Democracy doesn't recognize God's law. So trying to give democracy to the Muslim nations of the Middle East was at best a fool's errand. And you might even look at it more clearly as an overt attack on their faith, on their religion. And the result, according to Putin, instead of a triumph of democracy and progress, we got violence, poverty, and social disaster. And nobody cares about human rights, including the right to life. Do you realize what you have done? And again, he's talking about bringing forward what we now call terrorists. The Russian president added that the power vacuum following these revolutions led to the rise of terrorists. What are terrorists? I know they're barbarians and they're brutal, and there's a bunch of things that can be said about them and against them. And I'm not here to defend them. But we are caught in a situation where the government says, oh, we've got to fight against terrorists. We've got to fight against terrorists. Well, what is it? Define it, please. Tell me what terrorism is. And you can make a good case that modern concept of terrorism can be defined as merely conservative Muslims who are very serious about their faith, and they're not going to put up with any democracy. They understood, intellectually perhaps, or at least in their gut, that democracy was contrary to their faith. And insofar as they're serious about their faith, they are now holy warriors. They're fighting for what they believe God wants. And we sit back and say, oh, they're terrorists. Well, maybe they are. Maybe that's a term for them. Another term might be that they are, another term is radical Muslims, conservative Muslims, Muslims that are sincere in their faith. They're not secularists, that's for sure. But in any case, President Putin, he said, the result of us trying to create democratic revolutions in the Middle East has been a power vacuum. The power vacuum is there when the new democratically elected governments try to exert power in their country, and the people that are serious in the Muslim faith, they say, we're not going to listen to you. In fact, we may even chop your head off. And again, I'm not here to defend terrorism, but I am here to say this is equivalent to going ahead and seeing if you can convert a grizzly bear, you know, take a starving grizzly bear and walk up and offer him some hay and explain to him that if you will learn how to eat grass and process grass, you can live a peaceful life. And the grizzly bear is going to say, you know, you sure look tasty. The grizzly bear isn't going to eat the grass. And whether you came up with the best intentions of the world or you're just trying to fool the grizzly bear is irrelevant. The grizzly bear is going to decide to eat you. Our attempt, our claim to give democracy to the Middle East has been a fool's errand. And it has laid the foundation for much of what we now call terrorism. We've messed with their faith. They've come back and they've reacted to it. Putin is correctly saying, look, what are you people thinking about? Look at what you've done. Wake up. You can't just walk in the door and say, hi, we're here from America, and we're here to show you the one true God. They aren't going to buy it. And you can't sell it. And yet that's what we're trying to do. Or at least that's what we claim to be trying to do, our government claims to be trying to do. And we act as if this is such a surprise that it's turned into a debacle in the Middle East. Here's another part of the same article. It says in an earlier speech at the United Nations, President Barack Obama said it would be a mistake to think that Syria could be stable under President Assad. Now, the Russians, they're fighting for Assad, and the United States wants Assad thrown out. And Obama says Syria can't be stable under Assad. Well, Assad's been president of Syria for 15 years. That's evidence of stability. He's been able to resist U.S. efforts to have him removed from power for a couple of years. That's evidence of stability. If we want a stable Siberia, why don't we butt out and leave Syria to the Syrians? And what, pray tell, is the American interest in whether Syria is or is not stable? What do I care whether Syria is stable or not? It's not my problem. It's not my business. All right? What business is it of ours whether Syria is or isn't stable? Why are we meddling in Assad's regime? And the answer may be have something to do with oil pipelines that may cut across to Syria, depending on how things go. And we're not meddling to give people democracy. We're not meddling to give them freedom or liberty. We're meddling to make a fast buck, and not just make a fast buck, but to steal a fast buck. That's what we're really there for, and we call the people who resist us terrorists. Again, I'm not here to defend them, and I'm not certainly not here to defend the Muslim faith, but you know, if you're dealing with a grizzly bear, use your head. Stay away. Bear will have you for dinner if you don't watch your step. Acknowledging some of the criticism lobbed at Russia's proposal, Putin said his country is only proposing to help save the world from terrorism. Well, I would guess, you know, everybody's here to save us from the terrorists. But I'm waiting to see someone define what the terrorists are. Here they had another article on Obama. They said, read more, Obama at the UN. And, quote, I won't hesitate to use force. This is Obama. He's telling the people at the UN he won't hesitate to use force. Now, you may remember President Obama when he was first elected into office back in, what, 2008? He wound up winning the Nobel Peace Prize. How many wars has our peaceful president been engaged in? And here we have our peaceful Nobel Peace Prize winner telling the UN he won't hesitate to use force. In fact, he won the Nobel Peace Prize for being black. That's why he got the Peace Prize. And it's one of the most shameful moments for the Nobel Prize Committee in their history. They've had a couple others. Al Gore. I don't know who runs the Nobel Peace Prize or the Nobel Prize Committee any longer, but used to be, I think they were perhaps on the up and up. More recently, they appear to have been politically motivated. Putin, he warned the international policy toward the region led to an Islamic State with plans to go further than simply dominating the Middle East. And Putin went on to say, we believe that any attempts to play games with terrorists, let alone to arm them, are not just short-sighted but hazardous. Who's been arming terrorists? We have. Yeah, we've been arming terrorists. ISIS is allegedly moving around on scores of Humvees. We just left for them. I don't know how many other weapons they've got from us that were perhaps abandoned when we were there in the Middle East. We have effectively armed ISIS. There are claims that we've helped arm Al-Qaeda. All right, we helped arm the revolutionaries, the terrorists, put your own label on them, who overthrew Libya, the government of Libya, and Colonel Gaddafi, and murdered him. Putin is probably correct. You can arm these lunatics, they're going to come back to haunt you. Yeah. This may well result in global terrorist threat increasing dramatically and engulfing new regions. That, according to Putin, and I would say that's one of Putin's real interests in all of this. We're going to have the terrorists out of the Middle East. It's almost inevitable. I mean, they're relatively close to Russia. And they're close to countries that are associated with Russia. And in the end, as annoying as Muslims may be coming into this country and threatening this country, I think Russia has more to fear, more reason to be concerned with Muslims than we do. And I have a suspicion that Putin is concerned that the Muslims are coming to Russia before this is all over, and he'd rather stop them back there in the Middle East than let them come all the way back home. So we'll watch and we'll see, but this whole thing is a certain amount of sock puppet drama. Some of it's stupid, some of it's honest. Putin is correct. Do you realize what you've done? I think it's an intelligent question. I think, you know, Putin is no saint. But in the world of politics that we have today, yeah, I get the impression that Putin, if he's brutal, he's at least honest. I don't get the impression that the man is filled with deception and guile. I don't get the impression that he's laughing up his sleeve while he's feeding you a crock of lies. I think he works with the truth as much as it is in a very realistic way, an objective way, not a Christian way. Right? He deals with politics as it comes. Our leaders, they're there to deceive us, not to tell us the truth, but deceive us. And for that reason, Putin strikes me as one of the few politicians in the world today that commands a measure of respect. Not honor necessarily, but respect. You got to respect the guy. I think he's trying to tell the truth at least a lot of the time. Let's take another break for more commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hey, folks, I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, we were talking during the break about here Iran is going to issue Islamic treasury bills. This version of short-term sovereign debt for the first time on Monday. They're trying to provide a fresh fiscal stimulus for its cash-strapped economy. I don't know, they're going to be getting over $100 billion from the U.S. pretty soon. So, but they're only going to do about $300 million worth of the Treasury bills, a Sharia law-compliant way for the government to raise money. So, you know, you're going to be hearing this being pitched to investors saying what a great deal this is going to be once, you know, all these barriers are open to Iran. You know, hey, it'll be a good deal. So, you know, buy it while you can. You know, it'll be another scam and so forth. But
well, I'm not sure that I understand what's happening here, but if they're going to try to set up some sort of a funding activity that is contrary to the Muslim faith,
but it's going to be Sharia law compliant.
Well, if it is, then I guess it'll be okay.
Oh yeah, they're gonna they'll change it to make it okay. I mean, hey, they've been.
No, I think they really do have to maintain that They have become just an out-and-out theocracy. Well, most of them. And they don't dare cross the Muslim faith in a significant way, at least not within within each of their sects. You got the Sharia and what's the other one? I don't recall. But there are a number. There are a couple of them, but two. Pardon me?
That their law is the Sharia law.
Not for all of them. That Sharia is one of the sects, and I can't recall.
Well, it's the largest.
Yeah, well, then not just because you're the largest doesn't mean you're the craziest. You know, sometimes out of little nutcases, giant fanatics grow. Any case, have a problem because they're caught. This goes to cultural things again. You know, we talk about that in this program lately in the last couple of weeks. How important your culture and your cultural values are to determining whether you're going to have any freedom, you're going to have any liberty, you're going to have any prosperity. It goes to culture, and you must learn to understand your own culture where you can look at some parts of it and say, this is nonsense, we can't tolerate this, and try to get it out of your culture and other parts of your culture. You've got to hang on to and to recognize, honor, and defend because they keep you alive. That system of values can keep you alive. The Muslims are a classic example of a culture that is not going to provide you with significant prosperity in this world. They have become so theocratic. There was a time when the Muslims generated algebra, for example. These were 5 centuries ago, maybe in that vicinity, maybe more. But they were brilliant people. Now they hardly generate any books. I've seen one report that something like only 10 books were produced by Muslim countries in the last year or so. I don't know if that was just for one Muslim country like Iran or if it was for the whole Muslim, the Muslim community. But they are so obsessed and fanatical about their faith that they can't prosper. Now, they're not going to mind that. They're going to sit back and say, this is a price we gladly pay for our faith. Okay, I don't have a problem with that. If you want to choose a particular culture and you want to say that we're going to do things this way because we are more interested in serving Allah than we are in serving the almighty dollar or chasing whatever, fine, I don't have an objection. But you have to understand that when you pick that culture, you are going to live in poverty, live in or near poverty. You're going to find yourself hard-pressed to find prosperity, significant material prosperity, when you have that system of values. Now, I know there are Muslims in this country that are doing well and they're prospering, but you put them in a true Muslim community, they prosper because they're in a Christian country. They prosper because, to some degree, they're willing to associate with and even emulate Christians. But if you want to be a pure Muslim, take that vow of poverty. You want to embrace that culture. Well, that's what we have. That's what we see evidence of with the Muslims. They carry it with them. They're going to move to Europe. They're going to invade Europe. And Europe says, oh, come on down. There's plenty for all of us. No, there's not. The Muslims will go to Europe, and most of them will remain Muslims. They will not be prosperous. They'll take advantage of whatever welfare Europe can provide, and they'll produce 20 babies per family. And before you know it, Europe is going to be a Muslim nation, a Muslim area, and then they'll kill whatever Christians remain. Cultures matter. And we have to begin to see the significance of the cultures that each of us carry with us. You know, we all think we can go someplace and still be us. I want to move to Uruguay. Right? I can move down there and I'll be an American. Everybody will love me. No, they won't. If you're going to move to another country and you want to be a part of it, you've got to be absorbed. You've got to embrace their culture, which means you've got to turn your back on the culture you had before you got there. Or if you want to stay isolated and you don't want to be assimilated, fine. You can do that, but it's going to make life more, in some regards, more stressful, less prosperous, more antagonistic. Anyway, culture matters, and if you're going to bring foreign cultures and pollute your own and disparage your own, you're going to lose whatever your culture is. Provided, I keep saying, you must learn to recognize the fundamental values of your culture that once made this a great nation, once made people prosperous, and could do so again if we can grab onto our American culture, resurrect it, and respect it, preserve it, honor it, defend it. If we don't, kiss it all goodbye.
We got Thomas sent us a note. He says he listens to the program every day at the end of his day. He says our insight into the way our Western economy is failing is spot on. Some of our guests talking about killing off NAFTA, that would be fine. From north of the border, NAFTA has not done us any favors. The Keystone fiasco is just one of the deals that, from our perspective, has conned us into believing that we have had a real partnership with the U.S. The current and previous administrations have made us question that. As many commentators have said, America has forgotten its friends. He says he hopes that changes in the future. Thanks, Tom.
Yep, appreciate the email. But America has not only forgotten its friends. America has forgotten its culture.
Roots.
America has forgotten itself. While people try to tell us, oh, we mean multiculturalism and all cultures are the same and you need to respect, bunk. I don't need to respect a culture that'll cause me to be dead by the time I'm 45 years old. I don't need to respect a culture that'll put my children into poverty and subservience. I don't need to respect that. We urinate on those cultures. I do not respect them. All right? We need to remember our friends. We need to remember our culture. And someone else, I guess.
We need to remember our faith. We need to remember our God.
That's central. It's central to the cult. You know, people talk about, you'll hear once in a while, even Obama has referred to the term American exceptionalism. It's the idea that America is an exceptional country, the exceptional country. All right, and that it's fundamentally different from countries in other parts of the world. But nobody ever explains the basis of that exceptionalism. And the basis of that exceptionalism, and we're no longer exceptional in my opinion. Oh, we have certain advantages and rest of that sort of thing. We still throw our weight around, but we're no longer exceptional in the sense that we were. Why? Because we've forgotten fundamental values. And we can trace fundamental values back to the Declaration of Independence. Second sentence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Everybody's heard it. Nobody understands it. We are the only country in the Western world in at least 2,000 years to declare that every man and woman, and ultimately even unborn child, are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That rendered all of us into the status of being sovereigns, individual sovereigns, a topic that the government disparages and criticizes and tries to make sound like it's crazy. But the truth of the matter is, Supreme Court Chisholm versus Georgia back in 1789, thereabouts, I don't recall the date on Chisholm versus Georgia, but a Supreme Court case very early on, they declared that the people of the United States of America were sovereigns. Plural, without subjects. If you're a sovereign, I'm a sovereign, Melody's a sovereign, all right, then the government is our servant. If you're not a sovereign, the government is your master. This country started with the unprecedented principle that we were all given rights from God, and that rendered each of us a sovereign. And that made government our public servant, not our master. That was unprecedented, and it was the basis for American exceptionalism. That's why. We're the only country that's done in 2,000 years. Closest thing prior to that was the Hebrew nation after they came out of, in the Exodus after they left Egypt, and they all believed themselves to be directly under God. They didn't believe other people were, but they thought they were. All right? It was the closest thing. They were essentially saying the Hebrews were the sovereigns. They got their rights directly from God. They didn't have a king. They had leaders, but they didn't have a king. It was only later they decided to take the king, one sovereign, instead of everyone being sovereign. It was stupid. It was a terrible, terrible choice. We have done something like that in this country. We've walked away from the basis for American sovereignty, a basis for American exceptionalism. And some people still talk about American exceptionalism. They use the term, but they won't tell you what it means and where it came from. That's what it was about. And we aren't going to be exceptional. We can't be. We are no longer exceptional because we have forgotten that part of our culture. We've forgotten that fundamental value. We've forgotten this was the idea, land of the free. Why were we free? Because you're a sovereign. I'm a sovereign. Melody's a sovereign. We got our rights from God, and they were therefore unalienable. No one could take what God had given to us. Right? These were above and beyond man's control, above and beyond the control of any democracy or secular government. We've lost that. But if we were to go back to it, if we took a moment or a month or however long it takes to roll it over in the back of our mind and think, wait a second, that's still in our Declaration of Independence. We could still reassert those God-given, unalienable rights. We could teach our children. We could teach our neighbors. We could teach ourselves. We could reassert that we are entitled to those rights by God, not by government, not by Congress, but by God, and that government was therefore our servant rather than our master. We could do that, and we could restore the land to the free. But this is cultural values. You want to get the land of the free back? Would you like? Then you need the values of the land of the free. And you're not going to get them from Washington, D.C. You're not going to get them from your fiat currency. You're not going to get them from your local banker or corporations. You know, back and read documents like the Declaration of Independence and realize what it meant and understand that, and then we can go back. We can restore freedom, liberty, prosperity. You can do it, but you've got to start by changing your system of values. Frank helped out, our producer. I was trying to think of the Shia and the second major sect. And as Frank points out, it was Shiite and Sunni. And that's the fundamental schism in the Muslim faith. There's more, but those are the two big opposing sects, Shiite and Sunni. So,
but they still follow Sharia law?
Tell you the truth, I don't
tribes.
Know. I was confusing the term Shiite and Sharia, and so I was making a mistake. So I don't know if they're all into Sharia or they are not all into Sharia. Catholic and Protestant, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, the Shia and Sunnis, they're tribes, but they still follow Sharia law. But coming back to our law, we just got about another minute left. I just wanted to do a brief report today that for buying homes, and again, these are another signs that things are not doing well. And if you believe these numbers, so, you know, you have to think that, you know, things are a little worse off than the numbers that are released. But the National Association of Realtors today said that there's fewer Americans that are buying homes in August. And so we're beginning to see a slump in that area. And that's the big area that moves this economy, supposedly. And it's a big deal. And so you have signed contracts to purchase homes. They've climbed over the past 12 months, but yet they fell 1.4% last month. Medium home sales price increased 4.7% over the past year. And, of course, a lot of this, which is interesting, you have people who invested their down payment savings in stocks. So they're suffering all these losses. I mean, you have the S&P that's been down over 10% since the beginning of last month. So, I mean, those are big moves. And, you know, if you put your money in there, they're losing. And highly unlikely they'll recapture those losses. So they're going to be buying a home. And if rates begin to increase, nobody's going to be buying any homes. Also, the upscale food market, Whole Foods, they're going to be cutting about 1,500 jobs or about 1.6% of its workforce. They're trying to bring down costs. And, of course, you know, they'll be eliminating the full-timers, of course, in management. And they're also trying to become a little bit better, you know, using technology in order to save some money in the long run. So I think we're out of time, but I wanted to bring those two up before we left today.
Okay, we are out of time. Melody and I are leaving. We will be back mañana in the meantime with the good Lord. Hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.